show. If it's Thursday night, it's time for Race Trackers. The Kentucky Derby Trail starts again this week in New Orleans with the Risen Star and the filly version, the Rachel Alexandra. Laurel, Maryland is the place to be on Saturday with the General George and the Barbara Fritchie. I am Bill Gottemer with my co-hosts Mike Monroe and Bob Santame. As you know, each week we try to capture what has transpired in the racing world and bring new information to our listeners. Please spread the word about how much fun we have here each Thursday night. Hello, Bob. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Bill.
Good evening, guys.
Well, we start our show again. It seems, Mike, Bob, we've done this so many times. We start on a somber note, you know, America's nightmare with weapons and mass killings and schools killing the most vulnerable continues. And I don't know if there's anything we can say about it other than it's just discouraging and sad and frightening, horrifying all at the same time.
Yeah, Bill, I'm located one town away from Sandy Hook, and
wow,
it brings back a lot of real bad feelings and memories up here. It's, you know, I don't know what can or will be done about it, but it's just a really, really sad, scary feeling to think that, you know, children are exposed like this. I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't want to turn this into a political discussion. I'm not sure what will be done about it, but it's a sad day in the country.
Yeah, and our thoughts and prayers go out with everyone involved. It's just a terrible thing to turn on the news and see something like this, and it's getting to be more and more of a daily basis. And honestly, guys, they really have to put an end to it. I mean, you know, the stuff that this young man was armed with. I mean, you know, that kind of weapons should only be used in the military. And it seems like you can get your hands on it so easily. It's something's got to be done.
Well, you look at the website for the manufacturer, and I guess most people don't realize all the guns in the country are manufactured by one group. They have different names, but they're all owned by the same hedge fund that's owned by the same majority owner, by the same person. But you look at the website, and it says that the AR-15 is designed specifically to kill a large number of people very quickly. And it's hard to imagine that would be your tagline to sell something to non-military folks. I guess, Bob, I agree with you. I don't want to make this a political discussion, but I am tired of people politicians who've taken money from the NRA telling me what I should do and what I should think about this. And it's just even more unforgivable. And you were up near Sandy Hook with the idiots who perpetuate the lie that was something other than exactly what it was, the slaughter
yeah.
of the murder of innocent children.
Yep.
You know, it's just
right.
It's stomach turning, and at some point, no matter what you believe, at some point you have to live with yourself. And I don't know how those people can live with themselves, saying
yep.
and acting like that.
You know, Bill, just to end it, and Bob, it's a shame when you have to worry about your loved ones going to school and coming home safely.
Yeah.
I'm on a college campus twice a week. I teach. I'm an adjunct professor up at LIU Post. You know,
yep.
I'll be honest with you. Every. There's no typical college student. You know, they're all unique. I don't know if you could really pick out somebody who you thought was suspicious. Everybody's dressed kind of down. Everybody's either in a hurry or meandering. There's no real typical way. And you just look at that campus and you think of that innocence of people there it's amazing that becomes a target again and again and again, but it's just the whole thing's horrible.
Absolutely.
You know, and I guess the speed with which the world moves, you know, it'll move on and pretty quickly, and so shall we, I guess. You know, tonight it's a show about horse racing, not about topics, of which there's many. But anyway, I didn't want to let it go unmentioned. We want to thank, before we start, our guests from last week. We had jockeys Marie-Yves Mirage and Dylan Davis, and they both were their typical pleasant selves and gave us insight onto what it's like to be a jockey. We've heard that from a number of people about how hard they work. And in Rajiv Mirage Casey moving right across the country to continue his career, and they're both doing well, and they both did well after they spoke with us last week, so that was great.
They both actually won a race today. Dylan won one in New York for Jacobson, and Rajiv just won the last race at Santa Anita on a first-time starter.
Oh, very nice. Very good. I hadn't seen that. Bob, we'll move to you about, I think, the World Approval and Heart to Heart, the two grass horses who had a lot of class and showed it last week.
Approval, again, a champion. Just a brilliant move by the Cassie Barn just to show him up a bit, where he's now been basically unbeatable. It's funny, Bill. Mike, while those races were live, I was actually on a ferry from Bridgeport to Port Jefferson. So I missed them. But I'm checking my phone, and I see we talked about Heart to Heart last week. Likes Gulfstream, Inside Post, might be Lone Speed, and we're thinking on the call here, on the show, 6-5, even money. And I see Heart to Heart wins and made $7. I almost fell off the boat. I couldn't believe it. So Heart to Heart returning to his Gulfstream form where he's been very successful, and World Approval picking up where he left off. Now, I don't know what his next move is. Perhaps it might be the maker's mark at Keeneland. Maybe for both of them. I'm not sure.
I think it may actually be Dubai, Bob. Did I read that, Mike? Do I have that correctly, that they're thinking about going to Dubai with him?
I thought I read something to that, Nate, to that effect, yes.
Yeah, so that would be the perfect prep. He certainly didn't expend too much energy in that race. You know, he won handily. He won by a measured length, I guess, under a pretty easy ride. And I guess they're going to go on the international scale now to see really, where he stacks up, worldwide with for the big purses over there in Dubai in March.
Yep.
I mean, he's accomplished a lot here, and it'll be nice to see him go over there and make an impact. As you said, Heart to Heart, I don't know what to make of it. You know, we spoke about it on the show. He might be Lone Speed. We're a lot of times where we're complimentary of jockeys here. That the jockeys in that field, no one took it to him, and he went 48 seconds for the half mile, which is so slow that you had to imagine he'd have plenty left on the stretch, and he did. And it's nice to see him get a graded stakes win at the age of 7. So good for them with Heart to Heart. This week, I guess before we get into this week, I guess, Mike, there was some news. I guess small news. Linda Rice has accepted a 5-day suspension for improperly or not improperly, but making late scratches that were not approved in a race on a Sunday. Have you read much about that?
Yeah, just what you mentioned, Bill. I just sketched over the article, and five-day slap on the wrist. I mean, with the way New York racing is going, and with these cards, I mean, you look at these cards, and every day it's just worse and worse. I mean, you can handicap like tomorrow's card. I mean, if you even look at it to go through it, it's it's very depressing just to watch these races. Every race there's a 3-5 shot.
Right. Well, New York race, I guess Linda Rice was suspended and fined for scratching two horses and making it a very short field on a day when they had short fields to begin with, and one horse she felt had been treated with medication that might have resulted in a positive, and she didn't want to risk that. And the other one was simply, she said, her owner decided that she didn't want to offer the horse for a claiming price, even though they had entered for that price, and they scratched it. So they paid the fine, really a non-story. But, Mike, as you say, the story is the fact that this was like a perfect storm this year. Early in the meet, the weather got so cold, they lost a lot of cards. And I know they lost a few jockeys who went down south, Irad Ortiz being the most notable. And I guess, is it your sense, Mike, you're back there every day, is it your sense that people shipped horses out because of the bad weather and inability to train, or do you think this was destined to be from the get-go?
I think half of both. I don't think anybody really realized how cold it was going to be, and I guess with the new track that they put in at Aqueduct, you know, how it was going to surface, and if it was going to be able to be up to the winter track, the inner track that we had for so many years that we were able to race upon. You know, there were days where we got rain and it got warm, and then it got ice cold, and underneath the surface of the track was all ice, and there was no way, you know, that these riders would go out there and ride on it. And there were days that they just lost the track. But, you know, Bill, getting back to the Linda Rice thing for 1 minute, if I may, it's a double-edged sword also, because there's trainers like Linda Rice that enter a lot of horses that enable the racing office to put a card on. I mean, she's very, 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 very helpful in the racing office with entering horses and helping races go. And, you know, she entered two horses in a race, and I am, about an owner wanting a scratcher horse and a medication thing, but that race doesn't go if she doesn't enter those horses. So it's really a double-edged sword.
Right. You know, she did, and I guess that's one of the downsides. And Bob, we hear from handicappers all the time about how great it is that the fairgrounds take entries so far in advance. But the problem with taking entries so far in advance is that the trainer has to guess about the condition the horse will be in. And a lot of times it's a question of whether the horse has bounced back. You don't know whether the horse needs 2 days rest, 5 days rest, 8 days rest. So, as you said, Mike, Linda Rice enters a lot of horses, I think, at the behest of the racing office and at the behest of her owners. And there's a little juggling going on there. And every once in a while you get caught in a position where you put a horse in and you have to scratch it. And normally it's not a... Normally that's not an issue, but I guess when it takes a 5-horse field down to a 3-horse field, or a 5-horse down to a 6-horse down to a 4-horse field, or whatever the specifics were, it's that all that more glaring. And I guess separate from the New York racing, the lack of horses, I'm struck by, I'm not a speed handicapper, but I don't know, speed handicappers must be pulling their hair out, because I don't know where these times are coming from. This main track is so slow. I mean, it can't be, it's got to be a condition of the racetrack. It can't be talent, because even bad horses don't run as slow on the watch, you know, on the stopwatch as these horses are going. Is it just a really deep track, or what do you hear?
That's an interesting comment, and you know, being there on a daily basis, Bill and Bob, if you ever look at the work tab on a daily basis on the training track at Belmont, which this Aqueduct main track is now conducive to, you will see sometimes the works of for a half mile are between 51 and 54. This is a very, very, very slow track, this main track. You haven't seen any really knockout times. I mean, you've seen 6.5 furlongs today and 121 and 4. I mean, Westwood ran a huge number today. I can't wait to see what his number was. He ran a 19 and change today for 6.5 furlongs, which has got to be a gigantic number. But for the most part, Bill, this track is very, very slow, just the surface itself.
Yeah, I mean, it's been trotting horse times. I mean, I think I saw a mile and an eighth in 157, which is just, you know, which is on a good day, Bob. When you were younger, you could have run a mile and an eighth in 157. So,
well, it's like Roosevelt Raceway all over again.
Yeah, that's right, trotting horse times, right?
Yeah.
So, enough about New York. Let's focus a little bit. We're going to have, in 15 minutes, we're going to have our guest, Doug Bradar. I hope he's going to be able to make it. He was out to dinner, and he said he'll call in at 8:30, and he is the agent for Florent Giroux, among others. Mike, do you know who his other jockey is? I don't off the top of my head.
I don't off the top of my head.
Yeah, but of course, Florent Giroux had a tremendous year riding, riding the champion Gunrunner. So we hope you'll call in. Until then, you know, why don't we speak a little bit about this week? I don't know. I've looked at the cards. There's nothing that really excites me. I think the focus should be Fairgrounds. Fairgrounds runs two of its 3-year-old races: one for fillies, one for colts, and the colt race is the Risen Star, named after a tremendous New Orleans-based colt who won 2/3 of the Triple Crown, and the other is for fillies, named after Rachel Alexandra. So, like, take a few minutes to talk about those two. I mean, Rachel Alexandra first, right? She's often put up there in the names of possibly greatest fillies of all time, and I'm not 100% sure where I stand on that, but her accomplishment as a 3-year-old has to be considered, just wondrous.
Bill,
any thoughts on that?
Regarding the filly herself, Rachel Alexandra, I've been going to Saratoga 35 years, and no. 40 years, Dana, over 40 years. And her woodwork was the most exciting day I've ever spent at that racetrack. That track was electric that day. When she came out of the paddock, down the pathway to the track, people were sitting up on fences and was not only a great race where Burrell just held on at the end, but man, the electricity of that racetrack that day was second to none.
One of Tom Durkin's greatest calls of all time,
yes.
Too, Bob.
Yes. And
yeah,
and I'm sorry, but the race named after her, the 3-year-old Phil, it's just a super. It's not a huge field. But it's a nice one, and it's a really good betting race. So a good field to befit what was a very, very accomplished 3-year-old filly, Rachel Alexandra.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it on paper, it's mind-boggling. She beat, as a 3-year-old filly, she beat the boys in the Preakness, and then she beat older horses, in the Woodward, as you said, up in Saratoga, and I guess...
Right.
I guess the only thing the only sadness was that she didn't go on any further after that. I think that was the race that was
right.
The effort that took everything out of her. It's
there's only one
effort.
She won the Haskell.
I think that's right. That's right. She beat the Haskell. She won the Haskell as well. And we'll get back to the race in a second. The Risen Star was, just a tremendous. He was a tremendous, tremendous horse. Probably, but for a bad trip in the Kentucky Derby, he might have been a Triple Crown winner himself.
He was, Bill. He was 8 wide that race.
Yeah.
And he was just an automatic bet back, I thought, in the Preakness, and I think paid $16. My memory's right.
Yeah. He came back, and he won the Belmont. And Louis Russell is a local person in New Orleans. And
yeah.
He made a big thing about all the purse money for some of the Triple Crown races going to the Little Sisters of the Poor in New Orleans.
Right.
So it was a feel good story from beginning to end. And of course, Risen Star itself is a name that was religious based, meaning the resurrection of Jesus, and it had a lot going for it. It was he was a nice horse, and I'm glad he's remembered in New Orleans.
Yeah. His Belmont was one of my favorite races, guys, because it capped my largest pick six of a young career. I hit the pick six that day. I think it paid $23,000 or $24,000, and
wow.
I think I hit it with
wow.
a $48 ticket. Yeah, he
very
was
nice.
A single in the Belmont for me, and I hit it with a $48 ticket that day.
It wasn't Mike. That's, wasn't Personal Ensign? Didn't she win the race just prior?
Yes. Yes. Yep. Yes, she did. Yes, she did. And she was another one of my favorites. She was real good too.
And
that's worth talking about.
Yep.
Risen Star. I'm sorry, Bill. Wasn't he by Secretariat?
Yes.
I believe he was. Yes.
Best. He was among Secretariat's best sons, if not the best.
Yes.
Someone will probably correct me.
Yes.
Maybe there was someone who was more
right.
accomplished, but he was really the one that came about. You know, what's funny. I have a picture of Risen Star, Mike. I'll send it to you offline, or I'll put it on Twitter. That was taken by a good friend of mine, Mary Ellen Bonifati, who sat with us at the Belmont. And she was an amateur photographer, and she took a picture from our seats. And when the Risen Star was run 2 years ago, I put it on Twitter and said, does anybody know who this is? And people couldn't get it. And apparently there's an app on the web that you can scan every photo that's ever been on the web. And someone came back to me and said, I've scanned 16 million photos on the web, and this one hasn't been on there yet. So I said, that's because it's sat in my basement for, you know, 35 years. And I didn't put it on there yet. But Mike, if
great.
You win the $23,000 on that, I'll send you a copy of that photo. It'll be good memory.
I might have to buy that photo for you or steal it off you, out of your house next time I see you.
That's right. Well, there is a star, and we'll get back to the Rachel Alexandra in a minute, Bob. I want to talk about your thoughts on that. The Risen Star, I think, is probably the one that will have triple crown implications, possibly, and instilled regard, won the prep for this race so easily, and the horse who disappointed was Principe Guillaume, who is for Steve Asmussen and Florent Giroux, and maybe we'll get an opportunity to speak to Doug Bradar a little later about Florent Giroux's thoughts on that, because I thought he had a tough trip. And I think he was co-choice at the time, and maybe on Saturday he gets a smoother trip and kind of shows his reverses the tables there. But those would be the two that I would focus on in that race.
Yeah, listen, certainly, and I'll pronounce the horse's name wrong here. Principe Guillaume, being a tappet, will like the added ground, did have some trouble last race, has only raced three times, is certainly very capable of moving forward. So I'm anxious to hear what Flo says about this one, because, you know, he's bred to be a nice one. It's a really good race. I mean, Bravazo, I think, is certainly bettable. The favorite, of course, will be Jerry Hollendorfer's horse. Dallas Stewart's horse has shown the ability to run. Pletcher, of course, will attract money. So I think it's a very well-balanced, solid prep coming up down at the fairgrounds.
Yeah, I mean, how many times do we go to Kentucky Derby preps and come out of it surprised that a Todd Pletcher horse, you know, ran a hole in the wind and won?
Right.
This is a horse who's Noble Indy, by Take Charge Indy and owned by Windstar Farm, has been favored both times, won both races. You know, last race was in a bit of a tussle with a nice horse called Mississippi. I guess it'd be no surprise there if he went wire to wire. We've spoken on the show, as you said, that the favorite will be instilled regard for Jerry Hollendorfer to come back and beat the same field again like he did a month ago. But I guess if we're on this show, we've beaten it to death over the years. But tappets, horses by tappet, are very temperamental. And it looked to me when I watched the replay that Princess Guillaume got bumped around a couple of times into the first turn and bumped again in the second turn. And he just seemed like he was angry and lost interest and was doing tappet-like things. And maybe with a cleaner trip, he comes back to surprise anybody. Mike, did you get a chance to take a look at this?
I'm sorry, Bill, what's that?
I said, did you get a chance to take a look at the Risen Star at all?
No, but I will now that you guys have brought it up. Definitely will.
Okay, well, we'll get to you with Laurel in a few minutes. Bob,
sure.
Let's take 2 minutes and go back to the Rachel Alexandra. I mean, the horse I like in there is, and I like her because I just like the way she looks, and I like the person she's named after. It's Wonder Gadot, which I guess is named after the Israeli actress who plays Wonder Woman. And that's the 10th race at Fairgrounds, so it's much later in the day. It's the Rachel Alexandra. I thought Wonder Gadot, and I've been corrected now that it is pronounced Gadot rather than Godot. It's not French. It's Israeli. And that Wonder Gadot, I thought ran just a tremendous race to be beaten in neck last time by a horse who was pretty nice. And I would think she. I've even read somewhere where they're thinking about possibly tackling the boys in the Triple Crown chase this year. So that's the seventh race in the Fairgrounds.
Yep. Wonder Gadot is a filly I liked last year. I did play her in the Breeders' Cup. She's come back and done nothing wrong. She wins the Demoiselle very easily and then just gets beat in the Silver Bullet Day down at the Fairgrounds. I think she certainly will attract she'll attract attention at the wagering boards. I would say, Bill, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised if she wins, but I'm leaning a little bit more towards the other Mark Cassie horse, who I think might be a little bit more of a price is this Heavenly Love. Trouble in the Silver Bullet Day, and was bet that day. Second off the list, I'm throwing out what happened in Del Mar in the Breeders' Cup, but was very sharp last fall, has come back and worked unbelievably well since the January 13th Silver Bullet Day. I think you might get a little bit more price, and I think there might be enough lick in this race where a closer or someone just off the first flight like Heavenly Love might be able to get the jump on them. So Le Perou, Cassie, I'm not knocking the four. She's I loved her last year, but I think you might get a little bit more of a price on the six here, and I think she's working up to this race very nicely.
Well, clearly you're going to get a nicer price on her. And she did have a little trouble last time in her comeback race. It's the same race that Wonder Godot was in. And, you know, they were only separated a handful of lengths. And she had trouble with a bump at the break, and she was three wide, and she steadied. So no question that horse could step up. And I guess we're ignoring the favorite, Monomoy Girl, who's 3-for-4 and is only a neck away last November from being undefeated. But she makes her four-year-old debut, and with filly, with all horses going from 2 to 3, but fillies in particular, the horses who have a jump physically in a two-year-old career, other horses catch up to them physically in the three-year-old year, and you never quite know whether they're going to be as dominant as they were as a three-year-old as they were as a four-year-old. So I think Monomoy Girl will take a lot of the money. Wonder Godot will take a lot of money. And Bob, Heavenly Love, your choice, you know, will be clearly third choice, and you'll get, you know, 7 or 8 to 1, I would think, on it. So we'll put Bob down in the Rachel Alexander on Saturday at Fairgrounds. That's race 7 with number 6, Heavenly Love. And the time of that race is 4:05 Central Time, so 5:05 Eastern Time for most of our listeners on the East Coast. Excellent. The only other comment I would make about that card, it's a wonderful card, but early in the card, the third race, Looking at Lucky returns and makes his four-year-old debut. We haven't seen him since the Travers. So Looking at Lucky went through the Triple Crown Riggers last year, always a hard, trying sort, and you know, he made $1 million. Just made $1 million and danced every dance last year with the Derby, Preakness, Belmont, and Travers, and he's coming back for Steve Asmussen, and we'll see how well he comes back. And that's certainly a race of interest, and that's third race at the Fairgrounds.
As you say, Bill, it's an excellent race card at the Fairgrounds on Saturday. A lot of options in terms of what you want to play, grass, older horses, dirt, three-year-olds, etc.
Yeah, and we'll try to get a sense from Doug Bradar when he calls as to any of his mouths, which may be live. Mike, we're waiting for Doug to call, and I assume he'll call in a few minutes. After the fact, we'll talk about your trip this week, Mike. You're gonna go to Laurel. You're gonna go down to Maryland and see that great card they have in the winter here.
I am. I'm leaving tomorrow. Going to actually drive down with Mike Migliori and his son, and we're going to have dinner with Richie tomorrow night have a nice table, trackside table, and take in all the races on Saturday. Looking forward to it.
Well, the General George and the Barbara Fritchie have always been the races that traditionally, I'm talking 30 years ago, really was the return of the racing to the East Coast, or the Northern East Coast. And they Laurel back then was the group that was most brave to run their races earlier in the year, and the General George and the Barbara Fritchie kicked it off, and it was always the beginning of the return of racing from before we had winter racing in New York. But with that, our guest Doug Bradar is on the line, and let me have him join us.
Hi there.
Good evening, Doug. Welcome to Racetrackers.
Thanks for having me.
Doug, you're on with me. I'm Bill Gottimer. We have Mike Monroe, who you may know, and Bob Santame. And then we have some fun here on the show each week, and we're delighted to have you join us. We gave you a little introduction earlier, but you've been in the racing game for the vast part of your career and had many positions. And currently you're the jockey's agent for Florent Giroux. So congratulations on a wonderful year you had with your rider.
Oh, thanks. It's been very, very special. Quite a year.
It's clearly Gunrunner was the top champion horse, and of course your main mount for the year. But your rider just has had one good year after another, and it just continues to reach new heights, and has really reached the highest echelon of riders right now. We've had jockeys agents on before, but tell us a little bit about the pressures that you have in providing the best opportunities for your rider.
Well, when I first started, I obviously most of my experience had all been in the racing office. I kind of worked my way up all the way to being racing secretary at a bunch of major tracks around the country, and it's a very different set of skill set. When you're the racing secretary or the director of racing at a major track or even a smaller place, you control the destiny. You control a lot of things. You're in charge of lotting stalls and which horses are going to be on your property, what types of races are written, what the stakes program looks like. Pretty much, anything related to racing, you're in charge of. So going from that to becoming an agent, it's dramatically different. It really is. I knew a lot about the industry, and I thought I was pretty well-balanced, but it's just such a different set of skill set. I mean, you're suddenly, instead of having a position of power, you're basically more of a position where you have to ask. I mean, you're selling your product, your jockey, and you've got to just really, dig deep and hope that your jock can produce and that good things will happen and that everything will turn out all right.
Well, you as you say, and for our listeners who may not be familiar with all the positions you had, you worked on the racing secretary side and the racing office for many years and a number of tracks. We've spent some time tonight talking about the particular problems New York racing is having right now filling its card. And it's largely a function of the winter, but it is a problem that's racetracks across the country are seeing. Are you sympathetic to the plight of existing racing secretaries trying to fill cards?
Oh, absolutely. The last time I did that was at Gulfstream in 2009, and I saw some things. God, it's almost 10 years since then, but I saw some things where just dirt races just don't go anymore. I mean, it's the strangest thing. No matter what you do to try and sell people to run on dirt, you just can't get them to do it. And, everyone is like, well, let's run more turf races. Let's widen our turf course. Let's do this. And it's reaching a point now where it's very frustrating, and I have a lot of people come up to me all the time and say to me, Doug, what would it take? What if you got offered Saratoga? What if you got offered Del Mar? Some of the best names in the planet. And I'm like, no more. I just don't think I could ever go back.
It's a real struggle trying to fill a weekday card, Doug, especially
without a doubt. Without a doubt. Martin Pienza is a dear friend of mine. He helped me in this industry as much as anyone has ever helped me. I worked for him at Hollywood Park from 1995 to 2002. He helped me become the racing secretary at Churchill Downs. Wonderful guy, a very, very creative, smart individual. I feel for him. I truly do. I mean, I feel for all these guys. Rick Hammerly, pick a person across the country. It's just not, it's a thankless job. It really is. And, filling the races is only a really, really small part of most of these guys' duties and women. I consider George Ann Hale a close friend as well. So it's not fun. And I, you know, what the solution is, I don't know. I really don't. But I'm thankful that I'm on the back end of my career and doing something that I truly enjoy, and that I can hopefully retire after I finish with Florent.
well, there's no talk of retirement on this show, Doug. We're all retirement age, and none of us have enough money to even contemplate it. So that's why we're still working hard.
Okay.
You know, I guess with the horse population, this is a different topic. We won't spend too much time on it, but there is a feeling that there's a problem that there's overbreeding, and that there's too many horses, because you have the whole controversial issue of horse retirement and horses at the end of their career. You can't fill races, and I guess maybe the answer is somewhere in longevity, that the horses are suffering some injuries and they can't have longer careers, therefore they become excess, but they still don't fill races. It's a real problem, and in my opinion, could be an existential threat to the game at some point if it doesn't sort itself out. But back to your current position, being a jockey's agent. We've talked all the time, and as you know, Mike is a jockey's agent as well, and we've spoken about how a jockey's agent, particularly one who's been in demand, sometimes has to be the bad guy in telling trainers that you're not going to ride their horse back because you have a better opportunity. Different jockeys agents have different styles about that. Is that among the more difficult thing you have to do when you have a rider as in demand as Florent Giroux is?
It certainly is. It's a concern. You've got, well, having done this now for close to 10 years, my observation, and I'm far from one of the best, I can tell you that right now. I learn something new every day, but I can tell you this much: it's a real juggling act. It's very challenging. It appears to me that most trainers nowadays, they really just want a go-to rider. They want one person that they can use on almost every horse in their barn. And I mean, there's some that stray from that concept, but for the most part, they're looking for a guy that, you know, they know they can have work a couple horses every morning, and that when they call their agent, yeah, I'm open in most of those spots. So then immediately when you are unable to fulfill that situation for a trainer, you're in a jackpot. And I've always felt that the best way to be an agent is to really spread your risk. And from the moment I took Florent, I tried to get him in as many barns as I could possibly get him into, because one, you never know where a good horse is going to come from. And two, you know, if you do have a couple of bad rides or some bad situations, you are able to rely on, you know, more than just having all your eggs in one basket. So that's kind of my philosophy on it.
Well, we see you've done a good job of getting mounts for Florent Giroux upcoming on the big card on Saturday down in Fairgrounds. I think you have him listed on 9 runners, so we'll keep him hopping on that. We spoke a little earlier, and I want to talk in a little bit. And Bob, I know you have a couple of questions about the run with Gunrunner, but the two stakes horses you ride on Saturday, and the Rachel Alexandria, you ride Monomoy Girl, who's coming back from Brand Cox, and Prince Guillaume for Principe Guillaume for Steve Asmussen. Any insight you can give us on either of those horses in the stakes races?
They're both very, very special animals. They both can run quite a bit. I think Monomoy, you know, the question mark is going to be, will she return, you know, 100% fit or not? She obviously, her chances were compromised a little bit last time, just because Julian's horse went right with us almost from the get-go. So I don't really see that type of, you know, pace pressure on Saturday. We're looking for some nice weather. It sounds like the rain has finally left us. So you know, the question mark with that outside post. Does she, you know, go right to the front, or does she sit off of it? I think she's a very kind filly. I think she will rate. So, no, our expectations for her are very high. Tremendous amount of success with Brad Cox. So I think she'll be, you know, close to running her best effort. As far as Principe Guillaume, he is apparently going to be cross-entered in the Southwest Stakes at Oaklawn on Monday. They take entries, I believe, tomorrow for that. So,
oh, okay.
They're a little bit concerned about the outside post. We had trouble with that last time. There were obviously some concerns and problems because he had to break so far from the outside. He doesn't have to worry quite as much this time around. It's only a 10-horse field. I'm told that Wayne Lucas is going to be scratching one of his horses, so I believe we've already moved into at least the 8 hole, so that's
okay.
Encouraging. But they're going to take a look and see what happens with the Southwest as well. But, you know, we'll see what happens there. But he's been training well. Florent worked him 2 weeks ago, not last week. Continues to be very impressed with him. Feels that he's a really, really nice animal. And, you know, obviously we're hoping he's something close to the next Gunrunner, you know, that type of thing.
Nice. Nice. One question on that before we get to Gunrunner. Would you would Florent opt to go to, if they opt to go to Oaklawn, would Florent go with him?
Yeah, I've given Steve the call. So if for some reason that takes place where he scratches out of the Risen Star, we would be on him in the Southwest on Monday at Oaklawn.
Well, excellent. Well, thank you for that information. That is good information for us. Bob, I know, Bob, you were a big Gunrunner fan. Why don't you take over and ask a few questions about Gunrunner's tremendous run this year?
Thank you, Bill. First of all, Doug, again, congratulations on a tremendous year for you and Ryder last year.
Thank you so much.
It's been an incredible thrill.
Was
there a point last year for the whole Gunrunner team where you went from thinking, boy, this is a really, really nice stake horse that we have, to, wait a second, you know, this might be a horse for the ages and a horse of the year type animal. Was there a race or a point in time where you felt he was making that jump, or did the team feel all along it was just a matter of him closing the gap with Arrogate?
Well, I mean, I've never trained a racehorse. I've never ridden a racehorse. But, you know, from my observations from, God, what did I first start racing? 1983 was the first track that I worked at. So I've been in the industry at least a good 35 years. You know, you observe certain things and you see certain things and you hope that you can learn, live and learn. But yeah, I think we always felt that Gunrunner had an incredible amount of ability. Would any of us been able to say that, yeah, after we got beat in Dubai, you know, in what would that have been, March of 2017, would this horse go on such an incredible roll? I mean, I don't know. Maybe Steve or Scott Blasi, you know, the people that worked
right
with him, maybe even Florent, you know. But no, I think the stars were aligned. I think that Gunrunner developed into something incredibly special. I think, you know, I don't know where that really occurred, whether it was the Razorback, whether it was the Dubai World Cup, whether it was when he came back and won the Foster, but whatever it is, maybe, you know, maybe a light clicked on or what have you. But yeah, Gunrunner came something incredibly special and fulfilled, I mean, a lot of people's dreams and just made, you know, my life a lot more special than I could have ever imagined. I mean, My wife, Kate, and her grandfather was Ted Atkinson, and he rode a horse called Tom Fool, who is quite possibly one of the, you know, the best 10 race horses of all time. his 4-year-old campaign, when I believe he went 10 for 10, was about as incredible of a campaign as you'll ever see. So, you know, for Gun Runner to do that and for me to be involved with that with Florent and Steve and Mr. Winchell and Mr. Torrealba was an incredible experience. And, you know, I don't know if we really thought that he could do what he did, but, you know, I know Steve and Scott and the whole team were just so, so happy that they developed him into something so special.
You know, we were discussing Gunrunner on the show last week, and he's such a sleek, athletic, beautifully moving animal. We were saying he reminded us of Affirmed in the way he moved, and the way he looked down the stretch. And sure enough, ended up very much the champion that Affirmed was. Doug, did you go to Dubai with the team?
I was unable to go there. I've only been there once in my life when I was racing secretary at Churchill. I saw Roses in May went out there.
Yes.
But no, I was unable to go. Unfortunately, it's tough for me as an agent just because we're always so far ahead of the curve and I'm always trying to keep up with entries. And,
yep.
You know, you go to another country or sometimes even another state. And, you know, when we were in California for the last couple of Breeders' Cups, it's so hard to just do your job when you're not at the facility where you're taking entries or where you're racing at.
When you're managing a high-profile rider like Florent, do you, like, sit early in the year and try to map out a game plan as to where you'll ride and what you'll attack, or do you take the year as it comes based upon the opportunities that present themselves?
Well, I mean, when we first met, I met Florent in February, actually late January of 2010. I met him in Florida. I had decided that I wanted to try something different. So we were already in the middle of the Gulfstream meet when I took his book. We struggled tremendously. It was an incredible challenge. I got some dogs here next to me now. Let's move over a little bit. but it was an incredible challenge. Day by day, week by week, month by month, we were able to make some inroads. We went from being, you know, just another rider in Chicago to one of the leading riders in Chicago. We then were able to, you know, win some bigger races throughout the country. He won his first graded stake in the Pucker Up. We won the Breeders' Cup on Work All Week. But to get back to the question, right now we're kind of on a circuit that we sort of know where we're at. We've
mm-hmm.
had tremendous success at the fairgrounds during the winter. He's been leading rider there the last 2 years. I don't think that we will repeat as a three-peat, but you never know. Unfortunately, Florent's father died during the Christmas holidays, so we missed a lot of time during December and January. We also rode at Churchill Downs throughout the entire fall meet, which in the past sometimes we've come to New Orleans early. So we're kind of up against it to win the title, but New Orleans is very much in the picture. We love the fairgrounds. We've had great success here. His family and him just built a house in Louisville. So we know that we'll go back to Grang and do Keeneland
mm-hmm.
and Churchill. And I would imagine, unless something out of the ordinary changes, we would definitely go back to Saratoga as well. It's very, very challenging for a non-New York rider to go to Saratoga during that 5-6 week period, because most trainers are looking for a New York rider and they want a commitment, you know, down the road. But We had a great experience the last couple of years, so we will go back to Saratoga. It makes sense to ride for our Kentucky Barns and try and you know, establish more business with some of the New York clientele. And then he's had tremendous success at Kentucky Downs. We will go back there, obviously, right when the Saratoga meet ends, finish up in Kentucky at the end of the year, and then come back to New Orleans. So that's kind of our circuit. You know, in the beginning stages, when we were first getting going, we weren't really sure. We tried Oaklawn 1 year, but unfortunately, the state of racing in Chicago hasn't really gone the right direction. So we're perfectly content with what we're on right now.
Terrific.
Well, you've had some tremendous success, and to get to back to Bob's point, one of the things we commented here on the show was Gunrunner, like Affirmed, was often tended to be on the wrong lead late in the stretch, and it seems like you came to the Florent came to the conclusion, you know, not to try to change him, that it was working. Was that ever discussed, or was that something that Steve either worked with or Florent tried to tried to work on, and then just decided to let it go?
Yeah, to the best of my knowledge, I'm not privy to that. I don't believe anyone went out of their way to change that or try and fix it, if you may. I think that, you know, the horse was winning races. He did things right all the way till the end. And I've learned a long, long time ago, even when I was racing secretary, that, you know, there's certain things you can control and other things that you should just leave alone. And as far as the training the horses, that's very much the trainer's job. The jock rides them, and I'm here. You know, if you want some guidance or assistance on picking a race or, you know, this or that, I'll gladly help. But I'm certainly not going to jump in on something that I have no clue about.
That's always wise advice. Doug, you brought up your wife's name, Caton Bradar, who's well known to most racing fans for her wonderful television appearances, and she's been a previous guest on our show. And we told her we weren't going to speak about you while she was on. We weren't going to speak about her while you were on. But I'm glad you brought her up. I mean, it must be fun in some ways, but also to become known as Caton's husband after all the big things you've done in the game. How do you handle the notoriety that she has and the relative, from a fan standpoint, the relative anonymity that a jockey's agent has?
Well, she was, she grew up in the industry. Her, obviously, grandfather was a Hall of Fame jockey. Her father was a trainer. I mean, she worked for Bill Mott. She's earned her right in this industry. I mean, she, when I met her, I had hardly any knowledge at all of racing. I mean, I was the green person and she was the one that was the expert, but I'd like to have learned a lot about the game and that I think I can handicap with the best of them. And I think, you know, we have heated discussions and I wouldn't call them arguments, but she has her firm opinions on certain things and I do as well, but we both very much respect each other's opinions. And she's the pride of my life. I wish I could have spent Valentine's Day with her yesterday. I mean, the tough part in this industry is we're apart. I mean, we're apart a lot. And she's at Gulfstream right now, and I'm here in New Orleans, and she was going to come in for Mardi Gras for a couple of days, and unfortunately she wasn't able to, so I'll see her next week. But, I mean, we're all contingent on, you know, racetrack schedules and different things, and the industry, it's tough. It's really, really tough to have a relationship and, you know, in a marriage. And I mean, I'm proud of our relationship. We're going on 28 years together. And that's just an incredible number in an industry where just so many challenging things occur. I'm very proud of her. I love her to death.
No, absolutely. Well, you're speaking to three lifers here too. Mike, I know you're as long as I am in the marriage game.
I'm 28 years too. I'm with you, Doug.
Yeah, I'm
Nice.
And how does woman, when this woman dies, if she don't get to heaven without an easy pass, I don't know how, then there is no heaven to put up with me for 28 years.
There
you know, you know, I can't speak for Bob's wife, but I know Mike and my wife, when someone asks them how do they listen to this show, they say, no, we've heard them talk about horses way too much in the last 30 years. We don't need to we don't need to hear it separately, you know. So.
You know, Doug, being a fellow agent, I just wanted to, first of all, congratulate you on the great success that you've had with Florent and success in the game itself. I often look at you and Mike Lakow, and you know, I see that you guys pretty much came, you know, from a similar upbringing, and that you have two top riders in the country, and it's a testament to both of you guys that you really endured your career and you really know a lot about the game and truly believe in the game, especially, you know, the tough times that we're having throughout the game. But, it's just nice to see that, you know, you guys can come out of the office and come on to the other side of the counter and see what it's really like.
Without a doubt. The one thing that's different between Mike and I, though, I developed my rider, and he's got a rider that was already established. So don't give him any credit at all. My rider was buried on the bottom of the standings when I took him. No, just kidding.
Hold on, Mike. Did you hear that, Mike?
Lakehouse a good guy. I like him a lot.
Great guy, yeah.
We had our moments, you know. It was kind of funny because I ran into Mike a couple of years ago, and he told me, I don't know how you're doing this. I could never, ever in a million years be an agent.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? Yeah.
Yep.
So.
Well, you know, we often say, I spent my honeymoon on the French Riviera, and I read a book about the French Riviera, and it said that it was the type of place where people just wanted to be, and it didn't really matter what you did as long as you were there. So they highlighted someone who, you know, was a chef one year, and the next year he was a tennis instructor, and the following year he was a bartender. And the racetrack's a little bit like that. You know, once you're around it, you want to be around it, and there's many different roles, and it's more important to be around it and in it than it is particularly what you're doing. And we've been lucky enough, Bob, Mike, and myself, to have careers outside of racing, but also to be fans and be more involved, and this show helps us do that. So and we thank guests like yourself who come on and give us your time, and we have a dedicated group of listeners, and Doug, I hope you'll spread the word that we have sophisticated conversation about racing here on each Thursday night, it's a little more than handicapping, and it's a little more than cheerleading. So we're really proud to have people like yourself on. So I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Appreciate you having me on. And I mean, the coolest part about this industry is that you could get dropped off at a Sunland Park or a Turf Paradise or God only knows where. And if you go into the track kitchen or roam around, you're going to probably run into somebody that you know, which is pretty darn cool. It's pretty darn cool. So, now the industry has been absolutely incredible to me. I feel incredibly blessed, and it was great having some time with you guys, and I appreciate it.
Come back, join us anytime you'd like, and obviously Ferrant is welcome, but, you know, as, again, and we also pride ourselves on this show. We speak to people when they have their best moments, and we congratulate them. But we've been big on having people on who are having tough times too. So if you know of anybody who needs a boost or needs some publicity or needs to be able to tell their story, you know, please point them our way, and we'll be happy
Absolutely.
To give them some time. So,
absolutely.
Doug Bradar,
you guys,
everyone.
Have a good night.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Good night.
Yeah, that's interesting, right, Mike? I mean, of course, you know it as a jockey's agent, and it's tough when you don't have a rider who's in demand, and it's tough when you do have a rider in demand. I mean, I'm looking here at the fairgrounds entries for Monday, which I guess Doug said Vlachru has committed to follow Principe Guillermi if he goes to Oakland. They're listed on eight horses by my count. So, you know, it's going to be a lot of juggling and a lot of apologizing to do if you duck out of town for and leave eight mounts behind.
Bill, Bob, it's tough all the way around. It's just, you know, you can't please everyone, and you really have to talk to your rider, and you know, and get a feel of, you know. You know, it's a team effort. You know, what should we do? And you know, what's your opinion? And you know, who are we going to keep? Who's going to be upset? It's by no means an easy job. And the more popular the rider, the more headaches come along with it.
But the rewards are great too with a popular rider. Guys, I guess. Let's talk, I guess, a little bit about to go continue on and talk about the Laurel card, if that's where we want to go on this. I think that's and Bob, excellent questions, by the way. I mean, you were the one who pointed out during the year that, you know, Gunrunner had gone from, as you say, a really nice stakes horse to all of a sudden somebody who was something special, and he was perfectly managed by the Asmussen connections, and you know, met every challenge. And. And really, you know, when you look back on it, the fact that he was the price he was in the Breeders' Cup Classic, he was a pretty good value considering what he had become.
Bill, listen, I was questioning him up to the last step there, and you know, because we didn't think the fields were that strong. He was facing at Saratoga, etc. But he just proved me and I think others entirely wrong. He just blossomed into this superstar, and I was just curious when they thought they were sitting on that. That's all. It was just, he was fabulous.
Yeah, I mean, just we enjoyed having him around, and you know, good for them. It was a nice nice run they had, and it ended well for everybody. Mike, talk a little bit if you will about Laurel, and I haven't been to the new Laurel. And it's not that new anymore, but I haven't been there since they've been renewed it. It's a really nice track. Tell us a little bit about it and what's going on down there this weekend.
Well, like I said, you know, we're looking forward to going. I haven't been down since the new Laurel, too, but I've heard nothing but good things about it. And, you know, getting, you know, excited, going to be, you know, with Mike Migliori and down there. And hopefully, you know, we could, or Mike, you know, Dylan and I could be part of it. Them winning the General George for David Jacobson. They have a very good shot with Great Stuff, who won the Toboggan, and I think it's between him and Linda Rice's Duchere.
Yeah, two New York shippers going down trying to get the money. It's a quarter of $1 million, which at this time of year in the East or the Northeast is big dough. The General George, obviously named after George Washington, and obviously coincides with the President Today holiday, so I guess you're also doing something patriotic by going down there. That's always good, right? it's one of the major sprint races, you know, before the year starts to really begin.
Right, and you know, I'm hoping that Bob looked over the card, Bill, because his picks have been really right on. I mean, we had a tough trip with Apostle the other day at Goldstein, who should have been no worse than second. Actually, probably if he might have gotten off the rail a little bit earlier, he could have actually contended for the win. So I'm looking forward to see if Bob, and hopefully he did look at the card.
Well, we do have to compliment you, Bob. We do have to compliment you on Apostle. That was a tremendous pick. And actually, I passed it on to our two friends, Ed Dikey and Steve Redden, who were in the National Handicapping Championship out there. And I think they played it. They wound up running out of the money there. I mean, it was 800 people. There's only going to be a handful of winners. But Apostle made a big run, and you tagged that out pretty early over the racing form. So good job.
Well, as I said last week, I'm wrong much more than I'm right, but I do enjoy trying to see if we could, you know, if we can collectively spot something that's a price that might run well. And you know, for the listeners, that maybe means playing across the board or wheeling in exactas, or throwing the horse in a triple. But you know, to me, that's the fun part of the handicapping game. And, you know, if you get a Saturday at Gulfstream and you get deep fields, much like you do up at Saratoga, you're likely to spot something at 10, 15 to 1 that you know, is an overlay, and you go feet first, you know, and you take your chance.
Well, there's something to be said for that. Let's talk in general about handicapping. I mean, sometimes when you get lazy in life, or you get lazy in anything, you take the shortcut. And I remember telling somebody one time I liked a favorite, and the loss was 4-5 or 3-5. And he looked at me and he said, rather honestly, you're a better handicapper than that. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you got to look deeper than looking at the 3-5 shot. And there was, and that's constantly what you're doing here. You're looking for an angle, and you're coming up with horses. And by definition, you know, if you're betting 15-1 shots, if you're right more than once every 15 times, you're winning money. So and that is the challenge for people who are handicappers, who knew the game. You know, try to look for something that everybody else doesn't see. So
right.
So with that, Bob, what do you see that everybody else doesn't see in the General George? Anything? Have you had an opportunity to go through it?
I looked at it quickly, and while I would root for our guest last week, Dylan Davis, to have a big trip on great stuff, I don't know that there's a ton of speed signed up for this race, and while one of our rules is never to bet the rail in a one-turn sprint, I might look at this, and again, I'm not sure if I'm even pronouncing the name right, Cowboy Miz breaking out of the one hole for Marcos Zuleta. It'll be a price, and he breaks clean. He might be a little tough to handle shipping in from Park. So in a race that has some speed, but maybe not a sort of top-end speed, if the one can get out at 12-15-1, I might play him across the board. Training well, Sanchez in the irons. That might be the way. I'll be rooting for Dylan Davis because he seems like such a great guy. But if I'm going to play tomorrow on Saturday, I'll play the one, Cowboy Miz.
Well, and what we're talking about here, again, for our listeners, is the ninth race at Laurel. So it's 4:30 Eastern time. It's the General George, Grade 3, 7 furlongs. And, Bob, clearly something – they found the key to this horse. I mean, the horse from September till now, two different animals. You know,
correct.
In September, something was bothering him, or something wasn't right. And he took a little bit of a layoff from September till the end of December. And he's had two just monster sprint races at Parks. And I guess, Mike, we always used to laugh a little bit at Parks' speed. But last year, the horse, and he escapes my name right now, who was so good, was an Imperial Hint, or a horse who ran second
yes.
in the Breeders' Cup
yes.
sprint.
Yes.
Yep.
You know, he put kind of the kibosh on that sort of thinking that Park's speed wasn't legitimate. I guess, Bob, you're right. I mean, you know, he's going to try 7 furlongs for the first time in his life. He's going from 5.5 to 7, which is a big distance jump, but no better time to try it than when you're sharp as can be and going for $250,000.
And, you know, other than the two, where's the other big speed in the race? You know, sometimes
no,
horses
right.
get brave on the, you know. So
it's a bit of a lackluster feel for a General George, don't you think?
Well, that's what I was saying about Duchere and Great Stuff being you know, the top two choices. I mean, usually it's a pretty you know, it's a pretty good field, and it's, you know, $250,000, and you know, I'm kind of surprised, like you and Bob are, that they're, you know, usually that race is chock full of early speed, and you know, it is kind of lackluster. I agree with you, as is the Barbara Fritchie. If you really take a good look at it, you know, but we'll talk about that next.
Yeah,
Bill,
I agree.
Bill, did the Paradise guys consider shipping down for this one?
They did last year, and you're talking with Life in Shambles, our warrior who we have there. We thought about it last year, and but the last race, you know, the race that he lost to Dylan's horse, great great stuff.
Great stuff.
We were concerned that he didn't want to get seven furlongs, and boy, he proved us right. You know, when he hit the eighth ball at the six furlong mark, he spent the next eighth of a mile wondering why he was still being asked to run. You know, I think he's so. I think we've come to the conclusion that six furlongs is where he needs to be. If you were forced into six and a half furlongs, maybe at Belmont, you might be able to get it. But we're looking at two races with that horse. We're looking for maybe an allowance race of some sort at Aqueduct, and we're hoping to take that horse to Keeneland for a race at the Keeneland meet, which might be, you know, not necessarily profitable, but it'll be an awful lot of fun. That weekend I've asked both of you guys to come with us. That's April 12th through April 15th. So I think there's a race on April 15th that we're aiming towards.
I hope it's sprinting on the grass, because that's where I still think he does his best running.
It's sprinting on the dirt, but we can look for a grass race, I guess, too. But, you know, it would be fun to run at Keeneland just because, you know, why not? It's a great place to run.
You're going to be there anyway. You might as well make a trip to the paddock, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I hope both of you guys will consider coming out for that. You know, we have a group of eight guys, and plenty of room to make a 10.
We're giving it serious consideration, Bill. I can tell you that.
Good. Excellent. We can, they're kind enough, too. Keeneland, rather, is kind enough to give us press passes for this show. Cause they appreciate the work we do. And, you know, watching a couple of races from the press box up there is quite the experience, Bob. It's something you should try to make a point of coming out and doing. Bob, with that, this week, not to be maudlin, but we're marking the 4-year passing of our friend and great racetracker Michael Rooney. That'll come up next week, and so we're still kind of hard to believe we lost him. But I remember him being in the press box a couple of times at Belmont and holding court. So, you know,
until they banned him at some point, I'm sure.
It didn't take long. You know,
no.
I didn't say he was there for a long time. I said he was there for – I remember him being there. I also remember him being ushered out. But
Bill, I will tell you, we still miss him. We talked with the guys. You know, we still miss him. He was a good friend and a good person.
Right. He was a great friend. Well, along those lines, you know, last week I attended the memorial service for our friend Ricky Huzenik, who was another racetracker up in Saratoga, and his memorial service was held actually in the Hall of Fame up at Saratoga. So I thought that was pretty cool in its own right. You know, it wasn't a religious ceremony, but it was a memorial, and it was surrounded by all the greats, and they put pictures up on the giant screen in the Hall of Fame, and among those pictures was our friend Michael Rooney, who we just spoke about, and some pictures of a lot of our group. And I said, well, we finally made it to the Hall of Fame. You know, we're there. So that's not
funny.
maybe not a permanent spot in the Hall of Fame, but at least for an hour or so, we had pictures of us up there. So
you guys made a couple of trips over the years to the Hall of Shame, so it was good to see you guys go to the Hall of Fame.
You know,
yeah.
Bill and Mike, there was another item that caught my eye today that I thought was sad to see. You know, what I think of South Florida racing and horses shipping up to New York and or Saratoga, better name than Marty Wolfson.
Oh, yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
Evidently, he's been ruled off the racetrack, and all his horses have been moved to Danny Gargan. And I guess he's going through some personal struggles, and I was very surprised to read that, because to me, he was the top echelon of conditioners down in South Florida.
Right.
You're 100% right. I didn't even I just sketched the headline, but I didn't read the article. I didn't even know that Danny Gargan wound up with the horses. But it is shame. And when Marty shipped, he shipped for the reason. I mean, he would ship and win stakes all over the place.
Super dangerous.
Yes.
Well, let's hope he gets through it. It's you're right. I mean, the Marty Wolfson name was when they ship, particularly when he shipped to Saratoga, is particularly dangerous coming from Calder. I remember many years him doing
that.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, that's too bad. Let's hope whatever he's going through, he managed to get through it and get on the other side. This is a game where there's no question about it that you meet the same people on the way up and same people on the way down, and hopefully you meet them on the way up again. So we'll go with that. Two more races we want to talk about. One is the Barbara Fritchie at Laurel we spoke about, and then I want to speak quickly about the race at Oakhorn. I think it's a nice race. But let's move to the Barbara Fritchie. Bob, have you had an opportunity to take a look at that?
Quickly. And one of the angles that, you know, myself and the guys I run around with, who Bill, especially at 7 furlongs, we love horses turning back from a mile or a mile and an eighth with that extended, going into that extended sprint. And there's a horse entered by Jason Service. Now, it's kind of odd because Bishop's Pond has actually entered in 2 races on the card here on Saturday.
Yeah, I've never seen that in the same open. I saw it today.
But if Bishop's Pond goes in the Barbara Fritchie, she'll be a bit of a price. It's Service. Listen, I've met Michael Dubb once or twice at Saratoga with my friend Don Leisman. Could not have a nicer guy and a better ambassador for the game. So I kind of root for his, even though he wins a million races anyway, I kind of root for his horses a bit. I think Bishop's Pond's got an outside chance here to run big. So I might look at the 8 Pond again for maybe like a across the board play. Maybe put it with the 10 Cuisan, who's an awfully consistent New York bred, as an exacta play. If the 8 in fact goes in this race, and I don't know what their intention is on Saturday, but the 2 horses that jumped out at me were 8 Bishop's Pond and the 10 Cuisan.
Okay. Cuisan, Bobby Rabato, it's a nice horse. He's turned to be a nice horse. He's won a couple of races in New York recently. The horse that really caught my eye, and I don't know why we haven't heard of this horse before, is Ms. Locust Points, another horse for John Service. I mean, when you look at this horse's record, it's tremendous. I mean, first of all, she's been favored every single time she's run, you know, never less than 9-5. You know, her last race, she was 1-10, again, over the Laurel course. She's 5-7 lifetime and 3-3 over the Laurel course. I mean, she's won at 7 furlongs. I guess I'm wondering why they handled her so gingerly and didn't step her up into stakes class earlier. But maybe this was the race they were aiming for all along. I mean, last February she tried the forward gal and apparently had a problem. But since she came back, she's been lights out. She won by open lengths 3 times in a row, an allowance race at Parks, 2 minor stakes at Laurel. I think the 4-1 price there is a little bit generous, and I would think that this was probably their goal all along. This is the time to step up for $300,000. Now, she is fast. She's going to face a lot of speed from Danny Gargan's horse on the inside, Divine Miss Gray, who also I think is pretty nice. I mean, you look at Danny Gargan, and he doesn't really do this often, but he stepped her right up to the test stakes at Saratoga that day, and she was overmatched, but she's a nice solid horse. So,
yep.
I'm interested to see where the money goes in this race as far as the betting goes.
There's a lot more speed in the Barbara Fritchie than there is the General George, as we alluded to earlier. I'm going to be there, and for sentimental, I always root for Bobby Rabato. He's one of the nicest people on the racetrack. Great guy. Mark Keller puts a lot of money into the game. I'll be rooting for them along with them. You know, I got to root for one of my favorite fillies, and that's Namara, Highway Star.
The Highway Star, the other horse in the Breeders' Cup sprint, right? That her entry mate,
yep,
won the, or stable mate rather, won at 50-1, and she tries hard every time. The weights are interesting in this race, and Highway Star gets the worst of it at 124 pounds. I'd have to check the conditions as to why that is. That's a little bit that's tough for them in a $300,000 race to have to give 6 pounds to some quality horses. But that's a really good betting race, and I'll be interested to see how much money shows up on Ms. Locust Point and Bob will keep an eye on Bishop's Pond if he stays in and Cuisan for Bobby Roboto. The only other race that I had interest in, and I'm sure there's other races, but as you know, we do this sometimes quickly where we can. The other race that caught my eye was at Oaklawn Park, which is another great racetrack we don't probably talk enough about. Maybe we'll talk about more of it next week. Oaklawn Park is in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and it's very much like Saratoga in style and the town itself. And they have. I haven't been out there in decades, but I'd love to go back out there another time and see it. But they always put on quality racing out there. And the race this week is in the Oaklawn ninth race, and I think it's just called the Oaklawn. Let me make sure I have that right. That's the main stakes race out there, and it's fillies, and it pulls together some really nice horses. And the horse that's probably most accomplished is the horse Farrell, who, you know, has done really no wrong in her career. 7 for 11 and for Wayne Catalano, and won the prep over this course, and you know seems to do no wrong. I think she'll be favored with Channing Hill, but there are two other interesting horses in there to mention. One is Terra Promessa for Steve Asmussen, who's 5 for 8 over this racetrack, but seems to only run well when she's on an uncontested lead. And her last time was a little bit of a disappointment. She was favored at Farrell, and she didn't really show much. She's a 5-year-old mare, so maybe she's decided not to be a racehorse. I think there's a possibility that sometimes when mares become 5 or 6, they've had enough, and then their minds tend to turn towards motherhood. That's a possibility. But the other horse that I'm really interested in is a horse we spoke about on this show 2 years ago, a horse called Polar River. You know, Polar River ran in Dubai, had a career in Dubai, and was a nice horse and won big races out there for Doug Watson, who we had interviewed. In November, she made it to the U.S. and disappointed in her U.S. debut, but they haven't given up on her, and they're bringing her back for a 5-year-old career, and she might have a little more talent than appears on to most Americans, and she's 12 to 1. So with that, I went on too long about that, but have either of you got an opportunity to take a look at that?
Bill, I did not get a chance to look at Oaklawn, so I have to say I did not. And I don't know if Mike did or not. But if we finish up on that one, I'd actually like to point out one other horse that caught my eye in the Risen Star back at Fairgrounds before we close. Yeah, the selection discussion for the show, and this one, guys, definitely goes into the category of a wild long shot for sure. This horse will be 40 to 1 dime on Saturday. But
slow because I got to write this one down.
Yeah, I would not discount the chances of the 10 Eben hitting the board on Saturday for Steve Margolis and Gabriel Saez. The horse, the light went on the last race at Churchill Downs in November, ran a very solid allowance test, was off 2 months, was wide in the LeCompte and was 56 to 1 or whatever. Just, you know, was not bet. Empty, but wide both turns. Has come back, and you can't work better than this horse has worked since that race. They switched to Gabriel Saez. Steve Margolis is a 24% trainer at this racetrack. And this horse is going to be a bomb on Saturday. So whether you want to put it in with the 9 or Hollendorfer's horse or play it across the board, I wouldn't ignore the 10 in this race. And the post stinks, I'll admit it. It's horrible. We'll go the short run to the first turn. But this horse is training like it's going to move forward. Whether it's enough to hit the board, we'll see, but it's going to be an enormous price.
Well, this is the time of year when three-year-olds step up, and improve in leaps and bounds. He's a gelding, which is a little odd. But they're going for the big money with a gelding. And you're right. He's going to be a huge price. I don't think the outside post is going to bother him because he seems like he's going to have a trip that's coming from off the pace. And it wouldn't be the first time that that you see a huge priced horse in one of these Derby preps with horses. Horses killing each other on the lead and someone there to pick up the pieces. I guess we heard from Doug Bradaw, too, that Wayne Lucas is looking to scratch one of his horses. I don't know which one that would be. But,
right.
If he scratches one horse, that moves that horse in that much more. And if Principe Guillaume opts to go to Oakland, then you don't have a problem with the post at all at that point. Well, we'll put you down for that, Bob. That's a gutsy call.
Yeah, listen,
that's the Fairgrounds ninth race.
Bomb. Yeah.
The Fairgrounds ninth race, the Risen Star, at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Central Time, New Orleans time. So, small matter, I thought it was pretty good that we got Doug or anybody for that matter to call us from New Orleans 2 days after. 2 days after Fat Tuesday, after Carnival. I didn't even know the phones worked down there 2 days after. I thought you had to give it another few days before everybody came around. Mike, anything we've missed? Any thoughts this week? It's anything we've left out? I think we covered a lot of ground. It was another good show.
I actually do have something that I wanted to mention to you and to Bob. I was watching the races today, and I just wanted to get your just follow me on this. It's a Thursday in Florida. Gulfstream's running a full card. They had a couple of maiden races, a couple of decent allowance races. Luis Saez goes to Tampa Bay to ride a second time starter for Todd Pletcher, named Magnum Moon. He's owned by Luana and Robert Lowe, trained by Todd. He's a Malibu Moon. He's a three-year-old colt who I think made his second start today, stretching out, going a mile and 40 yards. The time was 1:39.1, but more impressively is he was 3-4 wide the whole way, and it just looked like he was behind horses, actually breezing with a couple of other stablemates. That's the way it looked like if you watched the race. It's not that he blew away the field, but he won like a 1-9 shot should, and he galloped out really, really well. Todd's got so many of these three-year-olds, but this is one I want you guys to follow. Magnum Moon, for Luis Saez to go to Tampa and ride for a $20,000 purse on a Thursday, this means something to me. I think he's definitely a Kentucky Derby hopeful. I'm going to try and get a future on him in the next pool, but I want you guys to actually watch the race and remember this horse's name, and hopefully when he does do something, people on racetrackers will know that we mentioned his name first. Magnum Moon, three-year-old colt by Malibu Moon for Todd Pletcher.
Excellent.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't see it, and I will look at it. But that's reminiscent of Always Dreaming. You know, we had Todd Pletcher on the show last year to talk about Always Dreaming, and one of the questions we asked him was, what was up with going to Tampa, and again for a small purse. And his answer was pretty simplistic. It was that, they couldn't get the race to go that they wanted to go in Gulfstream. They thought the horse was worth enough to give up a little money and to spend a little money to go cross state and to give up a little purse money to keep him on the track that they wanted him to go on. And so they went over there with the idea that this horse would make plenty of money down the road, and they didn't worry about the small purse and wasting the small purse at Tampa. This sounds very similar to that. So, Todd Pletcher's got everybody on a schedule, and if this horse was needed to run a mile and 40 yards today to be ready to step up to the big leagues, I don't think they minded going cross state. So that's, that could be a harbinger of big things to come.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you guys, it's not who he beat, it's how he did it. I mean, he just he was a winner. Bobby was a winner every step of the way. And when Saez, I mean, he never turned his head loose. I know, of course, the water's going to get a lot deeper, but this is a cult with a future.
Well, Malibu Moon is certainly, you know, royal enough breeding to
right.
to be something special. Well, it's what makes watching races in the middle of February during the middle of the week worthwhile, Mike. Seeing something like that,
right?
Yeah,
I happened to catch it. I was watching TVG. I turned it on and I said, Luis Saez, what's he doing down here on a Thursday? Then I looked. I pulled the charts up and I said, oh boy, now I know what he's doing down here on a Thursday.
That's funny. So Magnum Moon, like Magnum PI. Okay. That's excellent. So, all right, guys. Well, I don't know if we left anything out. You know, it's a great show. We still have a few minutes left, but I don't know if we need to go the full 2 hours. I think we've covered a lot of things. We had a good conversation with Doug Bradar. You know, we're always working on guests. Let's think about who we have next week, and we're glad to be back. So please, you know, have everybody spread the word that we're back on here and you know, having some fun again. So
hey, Bob.
Anything? Okay.
Bob, you know what this comment means? Why he wants to stop a little early tonight, don't you?
No.
I know 1 to 9 why he wants to stop early, because Arizona and Arizona State are about to tip off in a couple of minutes.
Oh.
I know exactly what he wants to do. You can't fool me, Gautama.
All right, that's a good
that's
game.
That's funny. I hadn't even focused on that yet, but I will now.
Oh, yeah, okay.
The rivalry is so hot, I guess bars in Tempe, Arizona, where Arizona State is, do not allow anybody to come in wearing Arizona gear.
It's a home game, too, for Arizona State.
That's right. It just causes
good call,
too much trouble. Well,
that's a real good game. Good call.
1 to 9, Bob. That's what he was driving at, Bob.
Well, there are positives and negatives to being predictable, rather, you know. So,
Bob, do me one favor, though, Bill or Bob. If you come across, or either one of you guys, look at the Laurel card on Saturday. I'm going to be down there. You know, if you guys come across something, if you could just tweet it out or you know, text it to me, because I don't tweet, Bill. You know, every time I go on Twitter, I mess the whole thing up. But Bob, I'm always looking for. You've been a great addition these last few weeks, and I hope you stay on with us every week. You're very knowledgeable, great handicapper, and me and Gautama, we could run real hot or real cold. So we need someone like you who stays right online.
Oh, please, I just enjoy the conversation. I'm a big fan of the sport and a fan of the handicapping pursuit. So. But I'm no better than the next guy, believe me. So I'm happy to be on every week.
Excellent.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much. As Mike predicted, I'm off to watch Arizona State, and we'll roost for the Sun Devils. And let's hope we see a big performance out of somebody. Mike, good luck down in Maryland. And I was down in Baltimore yesterday, so I can tell you the Jersey Turnpike is no different than it's ever been. It's not an easy place to travel on, but take your time down there and enjoy the scenery.
I'll drive down tomorrow, have some dinner tomorrow night, get back to the hotel, pull out the racing form, hopefully pick a couple of winners, and then go over there on Saturday afternoon.
Excellent. All right, guys, we're going to play the song. We'll be out. Thanks, everybody. Yeah.